This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. expresspros.com.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing else comes close.
Ekblad toward the net. Score! Anton Lundell ties this game at 3. Time, and it's a simple recipe. Score! What an answer! Mitch Marner puts the Leafs back in front. And Toronto hangs on in game 2.
Shot, save, it's loose, score! What an effort by the Moose, who was loose in front. To the net. Score! Mikko Rantanen does it again. He deflects the shot from the point. It's his second goal of the game. Duchesne, nice job. Sends it across. Rantanen in front. Score! Rantanen again! It's a hat trick in Winnipeg.
Playoff scorer from the draft class of 2015. You know who's ahead of Mikko Rantanen?
2015.
This should not take more than a second and a half. Oh, my goodness. What a blistering start to Sabres Live. Oh, my. Marty, no. They're going head-to-head. It's McDavid, Eichel, draft class. Oh. Connor is obviously number one and only ahead of
Years, they confuse me, like 2015, 16, 12.
Did you not live here in 2015? Like, I get it.
I did.
Like, I hate and don't give a crap about most drafts, but, like, we can't run from 2015 here in these
But
parts.
Maybe it's like, my brain is trying to shut it off. But, people are talking about the 2003 draft because, you got Marc-Andre Fleury retiring and, Corey Perry's still playing. I'm like, I don't – the 2003 draft doesn't mean anything to me. It just, there was a great draft class that year. You tell the 2003 draft, it doesn't really mean anything to me. But Mikko Rantanen is a beast, or should I say a moose, because he has been unbelievable the last, four games now, or three games, great. But he's been unbelievable.
Since he stepped into the NHL, he has 116 playoff points, trailing only McDavid, who has 130. No one has more playoff goals in that time than Rantanen, who is now up to 42 after back-to-back hat tricks. Nobody has more playoff game winners than Rantanen, who has 7. And he is on an unprecedented, never-seen-before pace of being in on 12 straight Dallas goals here in the postseason. Something we talked about late in the year when Pastrnak got on his role regular season-wise with Boston. But, yeah, this for a million reasons, is the biggest story in the NHL right now. How it happened against his former club, mm-hmm. how it happened after unsettled times in Carolina post-trade, and even to a certain extent Dallas, amidst the great wonderment of, like, what is Mikko Rantanen going to look like, even though he has posted star to superstar numbers in the course of his NHL career, what is he going to look like outside of Colorado? Like, how bad does this hurt for the Avs and or the Hurricanes every day moving forward? Like, and I get it. Like, we see star. This is actually a great reminder of why you get the often stupid sounding, but perhaps right cliche, that whoever gets the best player in the trade wins the trade. Obviously, right? And this is where we are today. All due respect to everything that Colorado may have acquired and Logan Stankoven and everything that Carolina may have acquired. Hey, Carolina could win the cup. Who knows? I mean, it's possible.
Well, you know what, you say that, and it's kind of funny because it is usually whoever gets the best player wins the trade. But because we're talking about the Dallas and the Winnipeg Jets, you know, I was reminded just the other day how the Winnipeg Jets acquired Neil Pionk, who is now the guy that plays a ton Trouba. With Morrissey not there. It was a Jacob Trouba trade to the New York Rangers. And it was all like, hey, the New York Rangers are getting Jacob Trouba. They win the trade. Well, Trouba was the captain and ended up being like, good, but not the same. And now Pionk was basically a fill-in, a throw-in, like somebody that was like, oh, along with this guy. And he is potentially their number two defenseman and now playing as a top defenseman without Josh Morrissey. So sometimes you got to give it some time. I don't blame the Carolina Hurricanes one bit. They tried to acquire a player like Mikko Rantanen. It was a really, really gutsy type of trade, something that we don't see a lot come in from the Hurricanes. And Eric Tulsky tried. And
that's not true. They acquired Jake Guentzel last year.
Yes, they did. Well,
so they're two trades ahead of almost everybody in the league. Don't say they don't.
But it was not like my view with Guentzel was they acquired him as a rental and they were like, whatever happens, happens. When they acquired Rantanen, I didn't see him as a rental. I saw him as, we want to get him. We want to keep him here. That's somebody, because they traded Marty Natchez for him. So, and Natchez was a guy that was rumored the summer before as maybe being on the way out. So Carolina's like, okay, we'll trade Natchez. We'll acquire Rantanen. We want to make a big move, a big splash, right? And that's what it felt like. Rantanen didn't want to stay there. So they turn around and they trade him. I don't blame Carolina. They made their swing. They end up with Stankoven. Maybe it works all good for them. Colorado, on the other hand, I feel like now this is coming to a head in Colorado because they lost to Dallas and Rantanen barely scored a hat trick in the third period of game 7. And also because of Nathan MacKinnon's comment after the trade and after the series, where after the trade, he was very much distraught by the whole thing. Like, this was his partner, his guy. And after the series, he says, they don't even have arguably their best forward and their best defenseman, and we couldn't beat them. I don't know what we're going to do. And then you have to bring, you know, McFarland and Sakic and the whole thing to do a press conference. And all they talked about was, you know, they didn't see a team moving forward with three high-paid players like MacKinnon, Makar, and Rantanen. They had to make a move. They weren't going to be able to, you know, continue their success if they went that way. They're in damage control mode. So, and then Rantanen goes out and has a hat trick in the first period against Winnipeg last night. It's all coming together like this perfect storm because of everything that's happened.
Right. But it's also all, you could use two letters here. Maybe I won't use them, but like the Avalanche didn't like the penalty called against them late in game 7 and they lost because of it. Like Rantanen could have ended the series with 8 points in the final 4 periods mm-hmm. for Dallas and they lose. Like, this is all very convenient as far as trying to pile on the apps. They were this close to winning the series.
I don't understand how they didn't like the penalty. Like, it was a penalty and I get it. It was Drury, right? That took the penalty.
Watch one period of Toronto, Florida last night. You tell me what a penalty is. I have no idea. That's why I'm not going to talk about it.
Well, we can talk about it
in circles. It's ridiculous. Even
I feel like the referees have been
insiders who never say a bad thing about officiating are tiptoeing right now, trying to say, you know, all this and not say anything about the officiating. And it's not just these individual officials. This is the lifelong problem of pro sports, not just the NHL. Confusion reigns at the most critical times. And it's unfortunate because I don't know how to answer it. I don't know how to explain things to people. It just, it is what it is. Like,
it's easy. After, it's easy.
What do you
like,
mean?
The officials have been doing a good job, in my opinion. They're human. They're going to make mistakes. Now, the problem that I have is that often, and very often, the league does not give the referees the tools to be able to just make sure that they get the calls right. And so one of the big things that has been coming out of the first round and is we guys got to watch embellishment. And that's something that's been talked about, is that the referees have been told by the NHL, you got to watch embellishment. And then Evan Rodriguez gets absolutely crushed from behind yesterday. They called an embellishment on Evan Rodriguez. And originally there wasn't even any calls on Scott Laughton for the hit from behind or the boarding penalty. Now I'm saying, give your referees the chance to be able to, number one, make the right call and feel like they're going the right direction. Now you make them focus so much on embellishment that they decide that's embellishment. I feel like it's a league thing that it one game happens, the coaches and the GMs complain to the supervisor. Supervisor talks to the league. Now all of a sudden it's a, we got to send a message. We can't take embellishment and, or we can't call too many penalties, or just let them do their job. They're going to make mistakes, but just let them do their job. Don't tell them where they have to look because they're going to overfocus on it.
I don't agree with that.
Well,
I mean, If we were told not to focus so much on statistics in our broadcasts, like, would we overcompensate to the point that we never talk about them? Like, I think it's good that the league talks to the officials and says, hey,
yes,
beware of embellishment here. I don't think the referees are sitting there then fixated on it. Maybe I'm completely out to lunch, but like, one thing that they should have been fixated on, based on how this series started and how it's always an issue, is goaltender interference. And when I flip the game on and I see Aaron Ekblad go straight into Joe Wall, and there's barely even a flinch, and it's the same elbow to the head, only from the other side of the net, nobody bats an eye, nobody even talks about it. And I'm like, this was actually harder contact than Sam Bennett on Stolarz. Now, granted, Wall had not taken one between the eyes,
yes,
on a slap shot, you know, a little bit earlier in the game. But I'm like, it's Aaron Ekblad. He just smashed Brandon Hagel to bits in the last round and got suspended for it. Now he's clearly doing what he wants to do, which is anything he wants. And there's nothing. And then guess what happened? 10 minutes of game action later, the game was out of control. There was no calls. There was embellishment. There was both coaches not knowing what is going on in the game.
Yeah. I think, just to go back to the Ekblad thing. So Aaron Ekblad is trying, the puck is in the air. He's looking at the puck. He's trying to get the puck. He jumps to get the puck. And then he lands and then makes contact with the goalie. Is that considered goaltender interference? Yes. I think that the referees could have easily said, hey, we're going to settle things in. Like, I'm going to call you. You went into the crease. You made contact with the goalie. I'm going to call it. Do I think Ekblad wanted to run Joseph Wall over? Not so much. And I'm like, okay, so that's part of the whole thing. But call it. Call it on the – and yes. Then after, there was a lot of calls that were missed, but missed on both sides.
Right.
So I'm going to say, okay, they decided to let it play. The players – I think understand that too. And then when it starts to calls are being missed on both sides, they take a little liberties, but it's both teams that are doing it. And they understand the flow of the game. And they're like, okay, we're going to get into it. But again, I think that big part of it is that you kind of tell them to focus on something. And if that's not the point of focus, then they let it go. So that's a big thing to me. Like, if you're going to say, hey, focus on, you know, the shots after the whistle and all of it, then they focus on that and then they let go the rest of it. So I don't know. I think it's a hard job to do, and we can break it down and go call by calls and non-calls by non-calls. Overall, they've been okay. But I do feel the goalie interference part, like when they review a Timo Meier collision in the first round against Freddie Anderson, mm-hmm. and they don't even call a penalty on it, then I'm like, okay, you probably could have called just the 2 minutes on that and set the tone that way.
Right, exactly. And no one's blaming individuals here. I'm just sitting here saying that it's impossible to explain. And
going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Some people follow the rules, I break them. I'm Soraya, and on Rule Breakers, we talk to the rebels who do things their way. Listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I think it's unfortunate, you know, that it becomes a talking point, but also more so from the goaltender standpoint. Like, inevitably somebody gets hurt, and then the debate then rages on, and you can't reverse history. And to your point exactly, like, just call a minor on Timo Meier, like, honestly, and then call another one last night on Ekblad. Like, you always say this, like, what's going to happen if they call a minor? Like,
who's going to complain? Who's going to complain?
Like, you can't sit there and waste three breaths on complaining about it. It's like, you're probably right. Like, it looked like goalie. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. No, you got to flip it around and recognize the reality of the situation. Anyway.
And look, like we go back to Sam Bennett on Anthony Stolarz. Is that a penalty? Yes. Is that a dirty play? I don't think that Bennett is thinking I'm going to hit Stolarz in the head. He's trying to make a play, trying to score a goal on the power play, whatever. But it's also Sam Bennett, and it's like everybody else, Brent Marchand, and all these guys in that same mold.
Aaron,
like,
when Ekblad, they get a,
well,
Corey
Aaron
Terry.
Ekblad, and look, we talked about years ago, it was Pat Coletta, right? It was guys like this that knew exactly where they were. I mentioned Eric Staal yesterday on the show. Eric Staal knew exactly when he would fall on the goalie. Mm-hmm. Oh, I got pushed. I'm sorry. And then he's like, 212 pounds of Eric Staal that's rolling on top of you like he's, you know, a turtle on his back that can't flip over again. You're like, come on. Like, they know what they're doing. Uh-huh. Just call the penalty and say, I know what you're doing, and be done with it. And then move on. That's really what we're asking, and it looks like, and we got Darren Dreger coming up at the bottom of the hour, so we can talk to him about a lot of different things, Sabres front office, Kevin Adams, everything, Eric Staal. One thing he mentioned on the, kind of post-game, you know, Sports Center last night is that Anthony Stolarz, this could be a long, like, wait. Like, he's not traveling to Florida. They don't expect him to be there for game 3 and game 4. He may be a little bit longer than, you know, what sometimes it happens. You get a concussion, you get a head injury. Sometimes you come back, you know, 2-3 days long later. This could take a little bit longer.
Well, again, they don't need to do anything here. they're up.
Well, was good last night.
He's always been good. Like, this has never been a debate. This is why he's already has a 3-year extension in his pocket while making basically the league minimum at 766 right now. Like, mm-hmm. This was never like we talked about it so many times during the regular season. The Leafs were so much better save percentage and team defense wise this year. It's why they are where they are. Like, they still have the elite scorers and their back line is way more solid than it's ever been. Not to mention,
do you buy in Brad Marchand's comments after the game last night? Oh, he's like, he's basically praising the Leafs. They are a different team.
He does this all the time.
He does this all the time, but he's praising. They play a different type of game. Yeah. They are so structured. It's a lot harder to play against. You know, he's basically just, with a little smirk, like just glorifying this Craig Berube Leafs, you know, different approach and maturity level. And look, I was impressed by Joe Woll last night. And not that I don't think Joe Woll is a good goalie, Duffer. I think Joe Woll is a really good goalie. But when you haven't played in 3 weeks or a month, the game, especially at the level that the NHL is at in the playoffs, it's fast. And I feel like as a goalie, sometimes you kind of fall behind. Your reads aren't as good. You fall behind in your movement. He was really quick. He was reading the play well. He made a couple of really big saves, athletic saves. I was impressed with how up to the level he was right away, you know, coming in game. Well, he played a little bit of game, you know, one. Game six, obviously, against Ottawa, but game one, I should say, you're right.
No, game one of this series.
You have this series, game one of this series, but coming in game two of the second round like that, I felt that was very impressive.
You realize Calvin Pickard basically didn't play for like 6 years. So,
yeah, but Calvin Pickard is also doing something in Edmonton that I can't really explain.
I can. Because it's called goaltending. And when there's so few of them at the professional level in North America, wow. I trust that whoever steps in is probably going to be capable. And now we're going right back into the age-old dilemma, debate of how do you spend your money? Joe Woll, 766. Logan wow. Thompson, 766. Yes, there's extensions already done for both of them.
Pickard, yes.
1 million. Charlie Lindgren, 1.1. Stolarz, 2.5. And then you have Freddie Anderson, 3.4, already being downgraded next year like a tropical storm to 2.75. So, like,
But Bob did win a cup last year at 10 million. Jake Oettinger is a really good goalie.
Hellebuck hasn't won a darn thing, and Oettinger's at 4 million, and Hill's at 5, but Hill won one when he wasn't making near that. So, yeah.
I always say, look, you would I want to have Shesterkin?
You had the audacity to describe who was the worst goalie starting this round. So, yeah, I'm a little bit on the topic of goalies right now.
Okay, so the reason why I say I can't really explain Calvin Pickard and what's going on is because every game he seems to give up a bad goal. And I'm not saying like, that one.
Do you know who used to give up bad goals? Grant Fuhrer.
I know, but listen, we're not going to talk about 1985 here. This is 2025, right? It's different. Goalies, you expect a certain level of play from your goaltending. Now, Calvin Pickard has played really well. He's won 5 in a row. Can't take that away from him, okay? If you tell me next year your goalie for the Buffalo Sabres, your starting goalie for the Buffalo Sabres is Calvin Pickard, I'm going to say that's not going to cut it. That's just not going to cut it. And I don't think anybody would be confident to think that Calvin Pickard as a number one goalie would be the solution to a lot of teams and a lot of organization. Now, what he's doing in Edmonton, it's working. The Oilers have played well in front of him. He's made some saves. They've defended well in front of him. They've scored goals. It's working. I don't get it. I still think that over an 82-game season, the better goalies, the Hellebuck and the Shesterkin, this year the Rangers were a mess, but the better goalies usually can prove why they're making that money. When it comes to the playoffs, it's whatever. I mean, we have seen some really high-end goalie wins, and we've seen some low-end goalies being able to get it done too. Playoffs are a different story. It's, you know, but the regular season, I want the guys that can get it done.
You know who's riding the longest shutout streak right now?
In?
Let's say North American pro hockey.
Is Devin Levi?
He's at 13 days and counting, and it'll be 19 days at least by the time he plays again. Did you ever in your life think of the Calder Cup and the Super Bowl in the same sentence?
Nope.
Like, what are we doing here? The Amerks are in their Super Bowl break right now. They're going to be 13 days between games.
Hey, I had a longer shutout streak before.
I want them to play. Like
I had a way longer shutout streak before.
Can't count off seasons, Marty.
Well, I shut out the Carolina Hurricanes last game of the season, and then we went to the conference finals. I didn't play again, so I was like literally a month and a half without giving up a goal. And then we went into the off season, but I was I was still in my season when that happened. A month and a half.
Cale Clegg has fallen out of the top 10 in AHL playoff scoring, just doesn't get the opportunity to add to his illustrious start. But the good news is, as I drip with sarcasm, bathing in it, quite frankly, the Amerks are opening up the next round against Laval. Mercifully, a week from yesterday. It's Wednesday, May 14th at Blue Cross Arena. Tickets are on sale now.
Yes.
And we're looking forward to seeing how that one unfolds because Rochester gets the first two. Go to Amerks.com to find out more about tickets.
Yep.
And then, as it plays out, games four and five, if necessary, would be held in Laval, home of the Rockets.
Who do you think starts for Laval, game one?
Obviously Fowler, because you've been talking about it extensively.
Well, the reason I'm bringing it up is I read a couple of articles in Montreal, in the papers and online, about I wouldn't be surprised if Caden Primo starts the series because he wasn't there to start the series in the first round. So Fowler got going because he was backing up Jakub Dobesh when Montembeau got hurt. So Fowler got going and he played well. Primo tried to come in mid-series, lost the game. They went back to Fowler. There's some...
So what do you think? You're the goalie guy. Don't ask me these questions. You should be answering it.
I'm asking you because obviously I want to have your point of view and seeing what you're thinking.
No point.
I think Fowler should start. If I was the organization, I would say start Fowler. But you know, there's a point to be made here that you could start with Primo and say, look, he was the guy all year. Start with Primo. And if it doesn't go well in the first game, you could always go to Fowler after that. You could do the other way. I think Fowler starts, but there's that debate. There's that question mark in Laval. Who do you play game one in Rochester, you know, on Friday?
And as it pertains to the scheduling, obviously this is league stuff, not Amerks and Rocket stuff. Do you think they could have compromised and had a happy medium and maybe started the series on Sunday? Like, just to not wait till Wednesday? Like, 10 days would have been sufficient, wouldn't it? Like, I get it, like,
yeah,
but you can't control how all the rest of the rounds are going to go, but you can help the teams that are already in a rhythm, you know, to just keep it going. Like if at the end you end up with a break, okay, that's what precedes the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Okay, we could have a break waiting for one opponent to catch up to the other come Calder Cup time. I just don't know why you do the break right now. I really don't.
So I'm looking right now at the PWHL playoffs and Thursday, May 8th, Montreal is playing at home. The Sunday, May the 11th, they're playing at home. So I get what you're saying. I think it comes in that the PWHL also, because they play
Rochester at Rochester is hosting, Marty.
I know, but I'm saying like, so two things. I'm looking at the building availability because the PWHL plays in Laval at the same building, how this comes into play. And then there's, okay, so do you want to play on Sunday and then have four days in between game one and game two? Or do you want to say, okay, we're going to get game one and game two together because of building availability, and then we're going to go to game three, four, five? I think that's why they probably waited until next Wednesday. You could have started it this weekend, but you would have had a longer break in between games in the series. They basically wanted to say, let's wait until we start it and had less of a break in the series as opposed to start it, have a long break, and continue the series later.
I don't know if I agree with that either. We're off to a roaring start today. Good
well,
news
right
is,
now the games are May 8th, May 11th, and May 18th in Laval.
What does another league have to do with this series when the Amerks are hosting it?
Well, because, so when are the three games in Laval? May 21st, May 23rd, May 25th. They're not playing a game until the PWHL first round is complete. So if you start on Sunday, May the 11th, And then you go to play because you drive Laval in. You say, we're not going to get you guys to be in Rochester for six straight days. So you're going to play on the 11th and the 13th, and then you're not going to play until the 21st. You're going to have 8 days between game two and game three. That's why they are waiting that long. That's the easy explanation.
This is your explanation. Have you talked to the American Hockey League about this? I'm really sorry that I actually brought this up now, but I am grateful that we're only on one platform today, which is radio and not television, because viewers were seeing the exasperation on my face. We could have show issues. So.
We would have really show issues because I can see you and I'm like, I'm giving you an explanation because you want one and you're not agreeing with it. So that's fine.
This is so ridiculous.
I've had to deal with
the only thing
I've had to deal with playoff scheduling.
And you gotta keep in mind like what they're up against with the NBA playoffs. You don't want to go head to head with that.
Well, no, that's not what it is, but building availability plays a big role. And I've had that happen in the conference finals in the AHL playoffs where there was the circus in town and the building was not available for 10 days. So now what do you do? Yes. Well, you have to play early and then you have days off in between. And I don't like days off, that many days off in the middle of a playoff round. I'd rather give me the days off early. But I get what you're saying. This is an AHL problem. It has been for a long time because Rochester and Syracuse were done early and Laval was waiting the play-in round and then Cleveland got this, so they started late and went to game four. It gives Rochester so long to wait, but you know what? They decided to win in three, and that works well because they get the rest.
The Amerks will start next Wednesday on the 14th. The Bandits are going to be starting the NLL Finals on the 16th in Bandit Land. It'll face Saskatchewan or Halifax. Bandits.com for tickets.
Let's break down the NLL schedule. Why are they starting on the 16th? Why
because
can't they?
There's still games to be played this weekend, unlike Laval and Rochester,
yes,
who could have started this week based on Laval wrapping up their series on Tuesday. Anyway, Darren Dreger next here on Sabres
Live. We'll ask him.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We've grown by one here in the back half hour of Sabres Live. Darren Dreger has joined the mix, and he has coaching news from across the NHL. Hi, Dregs.
Hey, how are you guys doing? Yeah, news out of Anaheim, and that is that Joel Quenneville has been hired as head coach of the Anaheim Ducks. I expect if the Ducks haven't done so already, they will officially announce it in short order here, and I believe there'll be a full-on media availability later this afternoon. And now, as soon as I reported on it via X earlier this morning, appreciably, you get the backlash and you get the reconnect with the Kyle Beach allegations, the saga, the fact that Stan Bowman, had to sit on the sidelines for an extended period. But now, of course, he's the general manager of the Edmonton Oilers. And yet Joel Quenneville, had to wait even that much longer to resurface as head coach. That doesn't matter to a part of society. What I'm reading is that, there's unrest as to why these men were allowed back in the first place. And so just to bring into the here and now, my understanding is that Anaheim invested a great deal of time and effort in the last couple of weeks, maybe 2-3 weeks, when they first fired Cronin. Joel Quenneville was the first candidate that they interviewed for the job of head coach. And when Pat Verbeek and company said, okay, well, look, we're interested in the experience of this guy, but we've got to do our due diligence. They went through what was described to me as an exhaustive vetting process. That, of course, dates back to Kyle Beach and everything that went in and around that. They interviewed people. I don't know if grilled is the right way to describe it, but they most definitely pushed Quenneville on, well, what did you know? What didn't you know that you learned after the fact? And just as importantly is, maybe most importantly, why didn't you follow up when the allegation surfaced. You know, as head coach of the then Chicago Blackhawks, why didn't you circle back to be part of finding out the truth and then dealing with it? And so whatever the takeaway was that was, you know, Anaheim feels that there's been enough reform work done by Joel Quenneville that he's the right man for this job. And so I'm really interested in seeing what this media availability is going to look like later today, how open and transparent and acknowledging Joel Quenneville is going to be of the mistakes that he made way back then with the Chicago Blackhawks. But as long as that process has been satisfied, then I think at least the hockey world should be able to move on and allow a very decorated coach to perhaps learn from his mistakes and, if necessary, employ the lessons learned from those mistakes in being a part of the Anaheim Ducks' future and developing some of these younger players.
Yeah, that's still an unknown, right? Obviously, you never know. But do you think that being that it's Anaheim and it's not as big of a market and not big as a media kind of, you know, center, it feels like, okay, that will be allowed or acceptable. But like, I don't know that Joel Quenneville would have done Toronto or New York or Philadelphia or like Montreal or like the big market, because I think that like Mike Babcock went to Columbus. And yeah. Unfortunately for Mike Babcock, he did what he used to do, and then he was shown the door before he even started. Do you think Anaheim maybe is a place where it opened the door just because it wasn't one of those big media markets?
Maybe. I mean, that sounds a little disrespectful to the market of Anaheim. Like it's wow. Not an outpost. I mean, it's one of 32 teams in the National Hockey League. I would say by volume of media, perhaps, right? Mm-hmm. You know, are you getting the news seekers that, you know, are going to constantly cover the Anaheim Ducks now that otherwise wouldn't, because Joel Quenneville is the head coach and, you know, you want to catch him, you want to, you know, hit him with this question that otherwise you wouldn't have any. I don't know, but I mean, Joel has had some expressions of interest in the past, and I look at a team like, you know, Seattle and the obvious history with Ronnie Francis, who's, you know, now the president of hockey ops with the Seattle Kraken, and Jason Botterill is the general manager. But I would think that Seattle would have had interest in Quenneville as well. But I understand what you're saying, Marty. I mean, you know, if the New York Rangers or a major center was in the market for a head coach and a guy like Mike Sullivan wasn't available and they did have some interest in Quenneville, and I'm not so sure they didn't because of the history with Chris Drury and Quenneville that dates back to the Colorado days, could it have been more complicated and louder because of just the mass of media? Yeah, to that degree, I think that there's some fairness in that.
Real quick, if you know, I mean, you don't have to be real quick because we're going to get to Sabres, but anything else new on the other coaching and GM vacancies in the NHL?
It's a tough one, man, because, you know, there are so many spots. You know, we're all still waiting to find out what Rick Tocchet's direction is. What does he want to do? You know, does he want to take time away? I'm sure. In fact, I know TNT would slot him in almost immediately if he was willing to do that. So does he want to put the pieces of his life back in place and take some time away from the game? I mean, we're going to find out, obviously. You know, Philadelphia most definitely would have interest. Of course, I look at the Pittsburgh Penguins. Someone identified the possibility of the Los Angeles Kings, right? Mm-hmm. Now, Jim Hiller is still the coach of the LA Kings, but Rob Blake and the Kings have mutually parted ways. So does a new general manager, speculation around Mark Bergevin, speculation around Kenny Holland perhaps being a fit in LA. I mean, on and on and on it goes. So that kind of stuff continues to percolate. What's interesting to me, though, is because of the number of vacancies here, you're getting a real cross-section of possibilities. You know, I've heard the Mitch Love speculation is out there en masse. Yeah. Pascal Vincent, who is with Laval in the American Hockey League. I mean, that's a guy that deserves a coaching post. You've got guys who are coaching the playoffs right now. Lane Lambert on the bench of the Toronto Maple Leafs is a name. Kirk Muller with the Washington Capitals. Glenn Gullitson with the Edmonton Oilers. And on it goes. Manny Malhotra, who's in Vancouver's system, has done a good job in Abbotsford. Could he get the Canucks head coaching job? And the answer is yes. So a lot of that stuff kind of drifting across the league right now.
Rick Tocchet will be on TNT Friday and Saturday as a guest appearance. So that is happening. And Pat Maroon will be on Monday next week. So, you know, they're rotating some people in as the playoffs go. Okay, Sabres. You mentioned all these vacancies everywhere, and there's GM vacancies. So there's different candidates that maybe are looking for GM jobs. Marc Bergevin, you mentioned Kenny Holland, whatever. Here in Buffalo, Eric Staal gets hired as special, you know, assistant to the GM or special advisor to the GM. But the speculation is that they're looking for somebody else, but somebody to kind of come in underneath Kevin Adams. I don't know if that is true or not. I don't really see how that would work, bring in somebody of experience and say, hey, you know what? You've been trying to get a GM job somewhere, but we have a under the GM kind of job as an advisor available. I don't see how that works. What do you make of all of the speculations and what's really happening here in Buffalo's front office?
Well, I mean, as of yesterday, the message that I got was that it was status quo. And as we talked about last week, I mean, of course, Kevin Adams and Terry Pegula and the brass of the Buffalo Sabres have had extensive conversations of late. And I'm sure that a lot of different scenarios were discussed. One of them, I think, was the possibility of maybe Kevin Adams taking on a different role. Again, maybe that president's role. But then what do you do? Who are you bringing in? Are you promoting somebody internally? What does that look like? All of those sorts of things. I know that Pegula and Adams are aligned. So I do think that there's value in adding a different voice like Eric Staal. Automatically I'm wondering, okay, well, you know, because those long distance relationships kind of work, but don't, if that makes any sense. Like, yeah, I don't know. Like, is Eric going to uproot his family? Is he moving to Buffalo? I don't believe that to be the case, right? He's probably going to work from afar.
And if he'll be here in Buffalo next week, he said, for the first time. But I think from what I was listening, it's that probably what you're saying. But also,
without him saying it, I'm confident in saying he is staying put in the state of hockey, Minnesota.
Yeah, yes. Right. Yeah.
But and at the same point, if he's the special assistant to the general manager, he has a relationship with Kevin Adams. He's not the special assistant to maybe the president. Like, Kevin Adams is remaining the general manager. That doesn't seem like it's going to change.
Agreed.
So, like, somebody coming in with experience would have to be in a lesser role than maybe what they're expected to be.
I get that. And I guess, you know, we've all heard the speculation. We've read it, you know, all that from Kenny Holland to go down the list. It feels like, you know, Pegula was adamant in going in that direction, or Kevin Adams felt like that was in the best interest of the club to go in that direction. They probably would have done that by now. Mm-hmm. No?
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like they would have done that by now. So maybe you build out hockey operations in a different way. And maybe the start is Eric Staal, and they add some other pieces. It's never a bad thing to have more voices in a process, but you've got to have somebody who can make the call, and that's going to be Kevin Adams until otherwise declared. And I don't sense that change is coming anytime soon.
Well, we have seen over the course of time many player agents switch sides and become effective, in some cases, incredible leaders of organizations, latest being the Florida Panthers, Bill Zito.
Yeah.
And this name has been out there across the league a number of times, and I read it recently, not specifically in connection with LA, but it would make more sense. Like, what is Pat Brisson's future? Is he going to remain super agent, or do you see him guiding a team someday?
Are you bugging my phone? Are you reading my text messages?
Like, been on my mind. You know how many times I have had, you know, post-show guilt for not asking this question? I feel like it's been on my tongue for months and months and months.
So. Yeah. Well, so automatically I'm thinking, okay, sure. It'd be nice and close to home for Pat. He resides near LA. So it does make a lot of sense. He is like a brother with Luke Robitaille.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They've just been connected at the hip since way back when, playing together way back when. Has a real good relationship with ownership. I mean, Pat would tick a ton of boxes. And you're right. You look at the success story of Billy Zito with the Florida Panthers. I like the two-headed monster of Jeff Gorton and Ken Hughes in Montreal. Mm-hmm. Ken Hughes brought a different dynamic, the same thing that Pat would bring to any organization. So I'm not dismissing it outright other than, and, you know, Pat's got more money than God. So I was going to say, is he willing to take a haircut to be the general manager of the Los Angeles Kings? It would make a lot more sense to me if you didn't have Marc Bergevin already within the organization, who's also a very dear friend to Pat Brisson. So Pat is like a confidant anyway, without getting paid by the Kings organization. So I'm not saying no, Duffer. I think it's valid speculation. It's a worthwhile public conversation. I wouldn't be surprised if there's actually an official conversation with Pat. But again, I look at Berge. I look at Kenny Holland, who some think is now more interested in LA, if it's possible, than he might be any other opportunity. So those are some pretty lofty names that Luke Robitaille and ownership of the LA Kings are going to have to consider.
Who would have been the original agent turned GM? Because for me, it would have been Pierre Lacroix, like the first one that I remember. But who do you guys remember, like, before that? Was there anybody?
Not before, not for me. I mean,
so
that
Pierre
was
Lacroix, like, taking over Quebec and then Colorado.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Do some homework, Marty.
Yeah.
And then dazzle Dregs when he comes back next week. Darren, you've never looked better on this show. We'll see you again next week. Oh,
you guys have a great weekend.
Sabres Live continues after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Two more tonight in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Carolina at Washington, Edmonton at Vegas. How can one not think of the 2006 Stanley Cup final? I think Carolina and Edmonton both win again tonight.
Well, I hate that you're bringing that up, and I understand that it is a historical moment. I want to know, over-under, Vegas and Washington, the total of shots. They had 31 shots combined in game ones, 14 and 17. Do they get over 40 combined in game two?
Yes.
I think that I should have made it harder. I should have said like 55.
60.
60? Yeah. Okay. So this is not going to be the same thing that happened in game one. These two teams are going to explode a little bit more.
I don't even know if I believe what I just said. Who do you think is going to win tonight?
I think the Golden Knights and the Carolina Hurricanes, they're both favorite. I think they both wins.
Wow. That could be tough for Washington to accept.
Yes.
We will talk about it tomorrow. See you then.